Tony TV, inspiring people across the planet to be a little kinder and a little more gentle with each other, delivering inspirational TV, one story at a time, from my lounge to yours. I'm your host, Tony Lontis. Good evening, America. Good morning, Australia. You're back on Radio Tony, Everyday Business with Tony Lontis. And I am really excited today to have a wonderful ex-Australian guy by the name of Matthew Pollard. But before I introduce you to Matthew, just a quick reminder, Radio Tony has its own website and you can find out all about our guests, all their links and where to connect with them on radiotony.com. Radio Tony also has its own Facebook page, so jump on and see who's coming up in terms of guests and you can connect and contact me there directly from Facebook. We are live streaming today into Facebook and LinkedIn, so thank you for our live audience for joining us today. Now, this amazing guest we have today is a guy by the name of Matthew Pollard, and he's been called the real deal by Forbes. He's the best-selling author of The Introvert's Edge, Amazon's eighth most sold book of the week, and Book Authority's number two best introvert book of all time. Matthew was responsible for five multi-million dollar business success stories, all before he was 30. He doesn't look much older than 30 now, I can tell you. His humble beginnings, the adversities he faced, and his epic rise to success show that anyone with the right motivation and the right strategies can achieve anything that they set their mind to. Today, Forbes calls him the global guru and lists him as the top 30 sales professional across the world. He's also named by Top Sales World magazine as a top 50 speaker. Big Speaker lists him as an international top 10 sales trainer. He's also a best-selling author of The Introvert's Edge, which hits Amazon charts as the eighth most sold book. So without further ado, I would love to introduce you to Matthew Pollard. Good morning, Matthew.
Good morning. I'm ecstatic to be here.
I'm really happy to have you on the show this morning, and it's amazing to be able to talk to a fellow Aussie in Texas from Australia and streaming live from San Francisco, if that makes any sense at all. It's a privilege to have you on the show today, and we will start the show. I want to know about you and your tough childhood. Let's start with what happened in childhood.
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, a lot of people, I think it's an important place to start, because I think a lot of people see me speak in interviews like this from stage because, you know, I've won all these speaking awards, and they're like, that's it. That person must have that natural gift of gab. They can just go out and they can, you know, they can just string a sentence together and just nail a sales presentation, nail a presentation, period. And the truth is, that is not who I was growing up. I mean, I had a reading speed of a sixth grader in late high school. Luckily enough, I was diagnosed with Irlen syndrome, which basically means I put on a pair of colored lenses and miraculously I can learn to read. Now, I couldn't read like everyone else. I could start the process of learning to read, which basically meant the first, you know, the last 2 years of high school were an absolute hustle for me. But luckily enough, I got the top 20% of my state. But I mean, I was exhausted. I had no idea what I wanted to do with my life. And not to mention, I'd been dealing with being the slow kid the whole way through. And then I was the slow, funny colored lenses, braces, and bad acne when I was graduating. I mean, I was really introverted because of all of that. And I got to the end of the year and I said to my family, you know, and they could see it too, that I just didn't have it in me to go to university right away. I needed to take a year off to find myself. Yeah. So, I mean, now, I grew up in the outer suburbs of Melbourne. So, and I'm talking, you know, it was a 45-minute drive to the city when there was no traffic at 6 o'clock in the morning. So, for me, my dad had broken his back 80 hours a week supporting the family. There was no way I was going to be the guy sitting on the couch watching Oprah, which the guy across the road actually did. And then there was no way also I was we were going to be able to afford for me to travel and just, you know, find myself that way. Yes. So, you know, I took a job at a real estate agency. And I know what you're thinking, out the front selling. I was the guy in the back office with a look on my face saying, you know, don't talk to me. I'm here to find myself. And, you know, literally, it was like that. I mean, you know, I was a quiet kid. Yeah. So, I mean, but 3 weeks into my job, I had my boss come up to me and he said, "Man, I'm sorry to tell you this, but they're actually closing down this office. You're out of a job." I've been there 3 weeks. So here I am coming into Christmas. And, you know, for the American audience that are listening, Australia is a little bit different than America. You know, we end Christmas at the same time. So we, you know, we take about a month off at Christmas. You know, most people go away on the 20th of December and they don't come back till the 15th to 20th of January. So here I am with no job, promising my father I'm going to support myself. And the only jobs I could find in the classifieds back then, this was well before Seek in Australia, you know, the job search networks, if you like, online, the only jobs I could find were commission-only sales roles. And as you can imagine, that was terrifying for me.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
I'm getting it.
Well, so it was terrible. I mean, so I'm confronted with this, but, you know, there were three jobs in the paper. So I applied to all three, expecting to get turned down by all of them. I got the job at all three. Now, it turns out they hire everybody. You know, my manager had this saying, you know, we throw mud up against the wall and we see what sticks. It's just, you know, trial by fire. But what happened is, so I started, I took a job at a business-to-business telecommunications company. And, you know, I got put in the business team predominantly because I wore a suit to the interview. No one else did. And I mean, it wasn't a great suit. It shined in the sun. It was just one of those horrible black materials.
Yep.
Lime green shirt, post office red tie, but it got me the job in the business team. And after 5 days product training, I got thrown on Sydney Road in Melbourne, Australia, and got told to go sell. And so I went to walk in the first door and I had this realization, I don't know how to sell. No one showed me. No one told me what to say. I didn't know what to say when I walked in the door. So I just took a deep breath and I walked in anyway. And luckily enough, I was actually politely told to leave. Now, shortly after that, I was less politely told to leave. Then I was sworn at. Then I was told to get a real job. It was always my personal favorite, right? I mean, it was the only job that I could get. But, you know, lovely, especially in Australia coming into Christmas time when they're all trying to shut the business for their month off. Yep. So it was pretty tough. And, you know, I went door after door. That just kept happening until my 93rd door where I made my first sale. And I remember I made about $70 and I was ecstatic for about 45 seconds. And then I had that realization, I could do this again tomorrow, and the next day and the next. And it just wasn't okay for me, right? But I think what happens is a lot of people that are listening, you know, that we've all heard of that, you know, fight or flight, right? We either quit and give up, which is, I mean, I was a member of 20 people in my training group and I was one of three that showed up for day two. So, you know, people quit those kind of roles. Why a lot of people give up in their own businesses as well. And, you know, or, you know, the ones that survive, they're the hustlers, right? The ones that have got that grit, the staying power, they're going to just push through.
Yep.
Problem is that neither of those were happy paths for me. Like that would have meant my year was going to suck. So for me, I took a step back. I just had to realize that sales had to be a system. Because if it wasn't a system, my year was going to be terrible. So I took it back and I went, well, okay, how would I learn this system? And I thought, well, I could pick up a Brian Tracy or a Zig Ziglar book, but remember my reading speed issues. It would have taken me a year to read it, let alone apply it. So at that time, you know, we were just going from dial-up to proper internet and YouTube becoming well-known. So I typed in the sales system and all these, you know, different strategies for selling and came up and I started focusing on one element of the sales process every day. So I'd go out and I'd sell and then 8 hours, you know, 8 hours selling, 8 hours back home practicing the next step and perfecting that next step. I'd do that 5 days a week. Weekends I'd spend 16 hours practicing. And that was my life week after week. But what happened, it got easier. I mean, I think, you know, very shortly after that was 71 doors, then it was, you know, 46 doors, then 31 doors, it was 18, 9. I got it down to, on average, one sale every three doors. About 6 weeks.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's pretty good.
It improves. So, I mean, about 6 weeks in, my manager pulls me aside And I thought I was in trouble because, I mean, remember, I was the quiet guy that handed my paperwork in downstairs. And he was puzzled. And he said, you know, this was back in the days you get the monthly sales report. And he said, we just got our national sales report. And it turns out you're the number one salesperson in the company. And this was, I mean, this was the largest marketing company in the Southern Hemisphere at the time. So that success took 6 weeks. And then, you know, after that, of course, they promoted me because they think everybody that can sell can manage. Not true. My training group, nobody came back day two. So, you know, I got given another training group. But luckily enough, you know, I went to YouTube, I learned to manage, and I became good at it. Because introverts make amazing sales trainers because they learn by process, right? So I got the nickname for the I got called the young Anthony Robbins. I got promoted 7 times in 12 months. And about a year later, I made the decision to start my own business. And I mean, if you fast forward just shy of a decade, I've been responsible for 5 multi-million dollar success stories.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, which is phenomenal. So I just want to touch back on what is your definition of an introvert?
Well, so I think that psychologists have made it way too confusing, like way too confusing. And, you know, so there's people that say, oh, I used to be an introvert, but I'm more of an extrovert now. It's not something you can change, right?
No, I agree.
Oh, it drives me, like, I understand, and I'll explain that in a second, but the introversion is an extroversion is where you draw your energy from. I'll give you an example. So I run a conference in America called, you know, Small Business Festival. And for the first event, I mean, it was listed by Inc. as the number 3 conference in America for small business. And the first year when we launched it, Jim Cathcart, who is the number 1 most award-winning speaker in the world, as a personal favor to me, came and spoke on the stage as the closing speaker. And he's an extrovert. He's definitely not introverted. But for 3 days, he was involved in the event. I mean, during one of the stressful times where one of my staff members was sad because it was her mum's birthday and she wasn't there, he played the guitar for her and sung to her. And, you know, he's just that kind of guy. Now, I was in the event. Yeah. We were both up on stage all the time. The difference was at the end of the 3 days, he was charged up and he wanted to go partying. Yes. Experiencing the live music capital of the world in Austin, right? So that was me.
And you were exhausted.
Absolutely. I wanted to go home, put a hoodie on, and sit in a dark room. Unfortunately, it came as a favor to me, so I was his host for that night. At midnight, I had to ask a guy in his 70s for permission to go home because I was so tired and he was still acting like a 12-year-old that was playing football out with his friends. So it was, that is the definition of introversion. For me, it's where you draw your energy from. It doesn't mean that, it doesn't mean introverts can't sell, network, present. It means that we kind of suck at it without a system, which we're going to spend some time talking about. But let's face it, introverts have their burdens to bear as well. Some might say extroverts aren't the best listeners in the world. And they, because of that, will go away and learn things like active listening, or HR will send them to learn active listening. The difference is extroverts know that whatever they don't have is coachable. Introverts, on the other hand, believe that there's this barrier that they can't cross. And that's what I spend my time helping people overcome, to help introverts realize that class citizens, their path to success is just different to that of the extroverts. So don't learn off extroverts. Yes. But once they embrace that, realize there's a process and a system for everything, ones that channel their natural strengths, they'll outsell, outnetwork, outperform their extroverted counterparts. And just to finish on that point.
Oh my God, that's good to hear.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, just to finish on that point, I will say that a lot of people do believe that they become more extroverted as they learn these systems. That's not actually accurate. It means that they enjoy those systems, because I know people that hated selling, terrible at selling, got exhausted, were too anxious to go, had chronic stutters, and now they love it. Doesn't mean that they don't come home exhausted. You know, for an introvert, it's like going to visit, you know, Disneyland. You know, you enjoy the rides, you have a great time, but when you come home, you want to hit the pillow. And that doesn't make more extroverted. It just makes you an introvert that has great strategies for behaving extroverted, but behaving like the best version of yourself when networking.
Yeah. It's so wonderful to talk to another introvert who understands that need to, I'm on the radio. Yes, I talk to people, but do you know the first 6 months on radio, I felt physically sick every time I stepped in front of the microphone, and I still get nervous. So after I finish this interview that I've been so excited to do, I will have to go sit in a corner with a nice cup of tea and go, it's okay. It's okay. You did good. It's all right. And that's the difference. Whereas if I was an extrovert, I'd be like, yeah, and jumping off the ceiling. So there's very different ways that we react to the world around us. And I'm so glad that you do this work and that you talk to the introverts and teach us these systems for sales, because that is your superpower. Sales has become your superpower through trial and error process. And it's a wonderful thing. So I'm just wondering, I've read a lot of your stuff, and so I'm interested to know some of the entrepreneurial mishaps that you had along the way, because they're great stories.
You know, it's interesting. So I think that, I mean, there was a time, and it was literally a 12-month period. I mean, so I was working at McDonald's for $220 a week. And then about 6 months later, I was earning well over a six-figure income as a commission-only salesperson selling telecommunications. And then fast forward another year, my wage bill was more than most people per week was more than most people earn in a year. And that perspective, of course, you're going to make some mistakes. I was lucky enough actually. So my mother was, I mean, she was really smart, but her father was a sheep shearer and her mum was a seamstress. So her principal actually picked up the phone and called, her principal picked up the phone and called her dad and said, she's the smartest kid in school. She could be a doctor if she wanted to. And her dad's response was, no child of mine is going to go to become a doctor. You're going to go to secretarial school where you can get a safe job. Right. Where, you know, so that kind of was the mindset. But because of who she was, she took herself back when we were younger through university. So I grew up while she was doing her business degree and reading, you know, books like The E-Myth and Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And my father went back to school afterwards and studied quality. So because of that, I mean, my dad's an auditor. My mum became a business coach. And because of that, when I started my own business, you know, my mother actually, I hired her to go, what am I doing here? Like, there's so much and so many processes. And my dad, our dinner tables would become more like board meetings sometimes, where my dad would order what we were doing. And because of that, you know, I think I managed to escape a lot of the mishaps that happen.
Yes.
What's interesting is, you know, I talk about, you know, rapid growth, and, you know, it's actually surprisingly easy.
Yes.
Growth, as long as you don't just focus on the functional skill. And there's three steps that are outside your functional skill. And if you do those, you'll get amazing success. The truth is, though, you can actually create rapid growth out of anything, but there's nothing worse than a rapid growth business with customers you don't like and a business you can't stand. So we can talk about that later. But the thing that I will tell you is there's also nothing worse than a rapid growth business where you don't have great business systems to back it up. So one of the things that I became very, very focused on, and it, you know, is that when I started to run the business, I would train salespeople, they would go out and sell. And then I ended up the process guy, right? I was making sure all the systems in the back end ran. I would, you know, with telecommunications, I would literally work out whether we could optimize the tray system for paperwork to go through, because it would save me tens of thousands of dollars if we could optimize it.
Yes.
So
yes,
because of that, I very young became that. I think the biggest mistake that I made was actually getting behind a business that I didn't love. I mean, the thing was, and I remember back to, it was 2007, I won the Young Achiever Award in Melbourne. And then I remember going home, and my whole life had been about proving to other people that I was good enough, right? Because I was the slow kid. And because of that, I was earning good money. And I think I felt like I had a little bit of an imposter syndrome because I was now succeeding and who was I to succeed. And sure, I'd earned it. I mean, now I look back, I hustled more than anyone. When everyone else was partying between, you know, up to university and around university, I was working 80 hours a week. So I earned all the success that I got. But, you know, I remember going home and going, gosh, if somebody mentions one more call rate to me, I'm going to go insane. If this is what success looks like, I mean, I had a 270 degree view. I lived in Eureka Tower in Melbourne, Australia. I had multiple cars sitting in the car park downstairs. I had everything that I could possibly have wanted for a poor kid that couldn't afford, you know, to do anything, you know, because he was working at McDonald's and paying his own way.
Yes.
Huge accomplishment. And yet I was still miserable. So the thing that I think Jim Carrey's got a great quote about that. Sorry, go for it.
I was just going to say, how do you think the culture in Australia, that tall poppy syndrome, plays into our minds from an Australian perspective? Americans, they don't have it. They just don't have it. But us Aussies, they'll cut you off at the knees as soon as you look like you're going to be successful. Did that play into your mind when you'd reached that level of success?
You know, I will tell you, I remember going out and buying my first sports car, and within a month, parking it in the back of my office, it got keyed. It was just things, you know, I remember the first time that I finally got it fixed, and the first time that I drove it back to my hometown to visit my family, a similar thing happened. So, you know, yes, those things happen. Jealousy is a big issue in Australia. But there are positives and negatives to both sides. You know, for instance, we do have tall poppy syndrome. That's something that, you know, I'd like to think that Australians are trying to get better at. But, you know, I think that one of the biggest hurdles, though, the thing I do like, though, is when you are trying to make a go of it, that Aussie battler thing really plays. So everyone wants to see you succeed. Everyone's pushing, but gosh, don't succeed, because if you do, I'll feel bad. So I'll need to bring you back down a peg. Right? That is the Australia.
Yeah, yeah.
Australia has that mateship Aussie battler, but no one likes a general, right? So that's kind of the Australian ideology, and the American ideology is very different. The American ideology, and there are specific states that are different to this, and I'll explain that in a minute. But the US mentality is when you say you're going to start your own business, no one wants to support you. They say, you know, oh, it's best just to stay in your safe job. And then when you succeed, you're a superhero. Now, there are a few states that have now got behind this entrepreneurial vibe, the startup cities, if you like. And the technology industry has been a big vibe for that. But what I noticed, and I actually wrote an article in Fortune magazine about this, Austin, the startup, the rock star of small business cities. And I think it's because they are the live music capital of the world, not the manufactured music, the live music capital of the world, which is like the smallest of small businesses, right? So what you notice in Austin is everybody has that Aussie battler feel about helping everyone succeed when they first get started. And then when they do succeed, they still celebrate them. And it creates this perfect storm where what happens it's a great incubator, but then when people succeed, the people that have succeeded, because they're no longer, you know, shunned from the community, they take it as their duty to support the people that are getting started. So it creates this amazing ecosystem of people helping each other out. Now, I've seen that happen in other American cities as well now, but it's just an amazing thing to see when they get it right. Now, I think that, you know, with the introduction of co-working facilities into Australia, hopefully that will start to change. But the mentality that made Australia strong is actually the reason why that mentality is a problem as people succeed.
I agree.
I would prefer it to the average not getting supported at the start, but those cities that get it right, wow, they get it right. And that's why they become charges for and incubators for startups.
So that's why you ended up in Austin, and there's a lovely story around what happened to you just around about the time you turned 30. And can you tell our listeners about that? Because it's a lovely story.
You mean my midlife crisis? So
That one.
What happens is, so I remember getting to, gosh, I would have been 28. And I remember looking back going, you know, I've now been in the workforce for nearly 10 years. I've worked 80 hours a week for as long as I can remember. And I don't even really remember what my hobbies are anymore. Now, a lot of that was what happens when you first start, especially if you run a business you don't really enjoy. You make money for the sake of it, and then you buy toys that you don't really need to fill that gap in your soul. And you can make amazing money doing what you love. That's what I learned, and gosh, I wish I learned it sooner. So one of the biggest exercises, and for those people listening, You know, I've got two podcasts, actually. The Introvert's Edge, which will be one that you'll be able to experience. Yes. Introverted Titans that will really help you see that you can be successful. But in Better Business Coach podcast, I actually have an episode called Forget About Goals, Why is the Key to Success? And I help people realize that they inherit their goals from their mother, their father, their drunk roommate they had in college. Hear things, then run after them, they don't think them through. And then you spend your whole life trying to get to a goal. And I got there, and I got there quickly, and I was miserable. Some people spend their entire life never getting there because they don't foster the fire in their belly. And other people get there, and then 30 years later, and they're like, why did I waste my life? And I was lucky. I got there quickly. And then I realized that I could make more money in less time by doing what I love, because how can anyone compete when it's connected to that huge amount of passion? You know, when it's the energy is not getting sucked out by the fact that you don't enjoy it. So, but when I got to 28, I remember looking back and going, okay, I need to learn what my hobbies are again. So I actually joined all those, you know, like Groupons and things like that. Not to save the money, but to be presented with all these things. So I, you know, I got my scuba diving license. I got my motorbike license. I learned the language. That didn't do too well, but I did try. You know, I went through that whole effort of learning and experiencing life again. And then I hopped on a plane in December, and I just made the decision that I was going to travel for a year. So my friends all you know came with me to Thailand for 2 weeks, and then they didn't know, but I was going off traveling. So I spent 3 months in South America, 3 months in the US, and 3 months in Europe. And the plan was to spend 3 months in Asia as well. And it was really just to find myself. And also, I was looking for a place to start up. I mean, you know, every business that I built was bricks and mortar, direct sales, telemarketing, retail stores. Yes. And let's face it, when you're an offline marketer, Australia's 22 million people. That's it. So I was like, I want a bigger marketplace, a new challenge. So what actually happened was, you know, in South America, I loved South America. It was a wonderful place. You know, some great people. Loved Argentina specifically, but they, you know, they're having political issues and things that made business probably the right wrong mistake. Would have been a horrible place to start. Brazil was interesting, but in truth, I love speaking English, and I had enough trouble learning how to spell and read in English. I was like, no, it's going to be English. So
fair enough.
America, I loved America, and you know, went to Europe, and obviously, there, you know, some countries speak English, but just loved the States. And what I found though is, you know, in Austin, I, you know, every story's got a girl, right? So I met a lovely girl, Brittany, in Austin, and we spent some time together. I came back to Austin a couple of times, and I got to about 2.5 months into my trip into Europe, and my heart just wasn't in it anymore. So I came back to the US. Aww. So I spent 3 months back in Austin, loved the city. And then made the decision that I was going to go back and get my, what they call an extraordinary talent green card, which are like hen's teeth to get. I was very lucky to get it. And then a few years later, I got my extraordinary talent green card, which is even more impossible to get. And you know, then I proposed and we got married shortly afterwards. But what's funny is I learned to run on, I got the realization when I first got here, if I start another business here in a bricks and mortar way, gosh, I'll be, you know, if my family gets sick, there's no way for me to get back. Like, you can't have 100 staff in Austin and then be getting back. So I made the decision I was going to go into an online business. And what was funny is that, you know, I didn't even know how to change the word "the" to the word "they" on a website. And literally within the space of 2 months, I synthesized what I knew about offline with online. And, you know, less than a year later, I was an award-winning blogger listed by Evan Carmichael as one of the most retweeted business coaches on Twitter. Everything that you see of all my accolades, it's because of my online presence. And I mean, I'm a guy that couldn't even spell, right? So it's, you know, for people that are scared of online, and I'm almost embarrassed to say that I thought it was I told myself it was a scam because there was no way I was going to do it. And then when I embraced it, my, you know, everything took off. And now I tell people all the time, got the right message and the right stories, technology, psychology, and strategy to get your ideal clients from all over the world.
Absolutely. There's such growth in the online sphere that it's exciting to watch and hear and see what everyone's doing. And if you go out into like the real world, then it's I don't think it's as fast or as rapid. And that leads me to your system called the Rapid Growth System, and it's pretty special. And before we talk about the book, I really would love you to tell everyone about the Rapid Growth System, how you come, what it's about, etc.
Yeah, sure. So I think the important thing is that the reason why the Rapid Growth System exists is because, you know, I learned to sell as a cold caller. So I created a sales system. But when I started my own business, I mean, if you've got no one to sell to, it's kind of pointless, right? So you need to learn how to market. Now, if you learn to market, and you then the funny thing is, you see this happening in corporations all the time. The marketing people are a silo and the salespeople are a silo. They don't like each other. You know, the marketers don't respect the salespeople because they see them as undegree qualified. And the salespeople, like, you've never even sold to anyone. So what do you know about the customers? And because of that, they don't communicate. So I was able to bring those two together, which very few business owners can. And because of that, I was able to create rapid growth businesses in Australia. When I came here, I synthesized online marketing with offline marketing and everything that I knew about direct sales with inbound sales. Now, again, most online people don't like offline people and don't respect them, and vice versa, right? The offline people think the online people are too scared to pick up the phone or just walk into a business. So again, I was able to synthesize all of that. And, you know, I'm a master in neurolinguistic programming, so the psychology of thought and the written word now. So because of that, synthesizing all of that together, my goal was to really create a complete system, like an A to Z, where you just follow the bouncing ball. But what I noticed is that most people's systems just focus on one thing. So what happens is you end up, you know, focusing on this shiny object, maybe networking, and then this shiny object, social media, and then this one around branding. And the average business owner spends their life trying to piece together all these multiple, often conflicting systems that they struggle to work out what to do first, what to do second, how it all goes together. It's just, it's overwhelming. So I created more of a step-by-step process, but there are key features that are unique that I invented specifically. And the biggest one is this concept of unified message, which really changes the balance in networking, in online behavior, to get people to lean in. I'll give you an example. Yeah. So, you know, when a couple of years ago, I had this client reach out to me. She was a language coach out of California. She taught kids and adults Mandarin.
Yes.
And, you know, for years she'd been doing successful. I mean, she was charging $50 to $80 an hour, but like all markets, you know, it started to become saturated. People were moving in willing to charge $30 to $40 an hour for their first clients. You had people that were in China offering to do it on Craigslist for $12 an hour, thanks to this global economy we now live in. And then also there were people out of, you were talking about Silicon Valley, San Francisco, people invented technology. I'll teach you English, you teach me Mandarin, we just won't charge anyone anything. So now she's competing again. So she comes to me and she's like, Matt, I need sales training to compete in this crowded market. And I'm like, that's just the spiral of the bottom. Sure, I can teach you some technique to be successful, but eventually they're going to realize they can get what you're giving them, not at the high level value you're giving it to them, but basic Mandarin education for free. So what we need to do is sidestep the battle altogether. So what I did is I looked at all the clients that she'd worked with. And what I realized is there were two executives that she was working with that she helped with much more than language. These were executives being relocated to China, and she helped them understand really three major concepts. The first one was the difference in rapport in China compared to the Western world. Like, you know, Tony, if I was trying to sell you something in America and I was a really bad salesperson, I say really bad because you should never have to ask for the sale. But if I was a really bad salesperson, I'd say something like, do you want to move forward after a 45-minute meeting, say? And you would say, yes, no, or everyone's favorite, let me think about it, right? If I was going to reach back out to you a week from now, I'd ask you the same question. If you still said you wanted to think about it, I know my chances of getting that sale are less and less. So if I was to go to China, though, they're probably going to want to meet with me 5 or 6 times before they even discuss business. Gosh, they're probably going to want to see me drunk over karaoke once or twice. It's just they are. So the thing you've got to realize is, you know, they're talking 50 to 100-year contracts. They're not talking about transactional 12 or 24-month deals. So they want to know the kind of person doing business with. It's more important than the agreement. So she helped them understand that, the importance of the difference in e-commerce in the Western world versus the East, the importance of respect. So why learning the language isn't enough. You have to reduce your accent, how to handle a business card and why it matters so much. And I'm like, when you stop, you're doing so much more for these people than just language tuition. What are you doing? And she's like, yeah. Well, just a few things. I'm just trying to help. And I'm like, this is what I notice all business owners are stuck in. I'm like, you're stuck in your functional skill. Is it fair to assume that as a result of the assistance you're giving these people, they're going to be more successful when they get to China? And she's like, well, yeah, I mean, that's the point, right? Yes. So I said, right, well, let's call you the China Success Coach then. Let's focus on creating a China Success Intensive, which became what we call a Trojan Horse Package. But basically, it's a five-week program that worked with the executive, the spouse, and any children, you know, getting them ready to be relocated to China and be successful when they get there. So she loved the idea. Like, well, who do I sell it to? I said, well, who do you think your ideal client is? And she's like, well, obviously it's the executive, you know, they're getting relocated. I'm like, yeah, I mean, I'm terrified moving from Australia to the US. It makes sense, but it's not your ideal client. And she's like, well, the company will pay. I'm like, yeah, I mean, they have often millions of dollars riding on an executive being successful. It's still not your ideal client. So frustrated, she's like, well, who then? I said, your ideal client's the immigration attorney. She's like, what? And I said, you think about it. These people make $5,000 to $7,000 for all the paperwork, all the bureaucracy that comes with doing a visa. They've got to pay for getting a client, which is cheap. They've got to, you know, hustle to get that client, do all the, you know, hire staff and office space. They'd be lucky to make $3,000 a visa. I said, so just offer them $3,000 for a successful introduction. They loved the idea. They were like, double my profit for a simple introduction. What do we have to say? Well, all she had to do is say, congratulations, you've now got your visa. I just want to double check you're as ready as possible to be relocated to China. And they would say, over an executive, I think we're good. You know, we've got our place sorted. We're learning the language. Kids are getting pretty good at it too. We've got our visa now. Yeah. I think we're good to go. And they just respond with, there's actually a lot more to it than that. I think you need to speak to the China Success Coach. Wendy then get on the phone with the easiest sale in the world. I mean, these people were terrified to go. The organization was motivated to make sure they were a success. She'd then get on the phone and sell this. After a $3,000 commission, she made $27,000 for the easiest sale in the world, as opposed to hustling every day trying to convince people to charge $50 to $80 an hour. Think about how much easier the sales process is, right? So the focus is you start by saying, what are the things that I do outside the scope of my functional skill? Then what are the higher level benefits of that? For Wendy, it was rapport, e-commerce, respect, relationship. You know, the higher level for that was China Success. For me, I mean, I'm a business coach, a branding expert, a social media strategist. I'm a master in neuro-linguistic programming. I mean, I'm too many things. And truthfully, nobody cares. They don't care how hard it was for me to learn those things. They don't care how long it took me to learn them. But when I say I'm the rapid growth guy and I work with introverted service providers to help them obtain rapid growth, the simplicity of that message gets me heard in a crowded marketplace. You then take that framing and niche it down, like the China Success Coach for executives relocating, or me, as I said, with introverted service providers. It makes you the only logical choice to a smaller few. After that, who to call, where to go networking becomes easy to work out. And then creating a sales system has so little variables because everybody is exactly the same. So you're selling to similar people every single time. So there's all the heavy lifting. Now we get that.
Yeah.
Messaging and use some online automation. Next thing you know, you've got people from all over the world that are excited and inspired by your message, that see you as the only logical choice because they're in your niche and they're chasing you.
Yeah. Fantastic. And so that's exactly what you've been doing since you moved to Austin, Texas, what, 6-7 years ago?
Well, yeah, so I moved to Austin in 2014. We actually moved to North Carolina about a year and a half ago now. So Austin was a great city, don't get me wrong. But being the introvert that I am, with me speaking in so many concrete jungles, my wife and I decided that we were going to go hide away in a little country town in North Carolina. So, you know, we're still close enough to an airport for me to do a lot of international speaking events and things like that, get home and visit the family. But yeah, that's what we've been focused on. So, you know, what's interesting. So the book you're talking about is The Introvert's Edge, which is my book where I talk and really break down the sales process. But my new book is actually The Introvert's Edge to Networking. And that comes out in January. Yes. And it's actually available for pre-order now. So if you do order it, send Tony your receipt and I'll make sure you get all the pre-order bonuses we're putting together. You can also go, by the way, to theintrovertsedge.com/networking. It's not loaded up now, but if you put your email address there, we'll send you the first chapter as soon as it's available to come out.
And it's a great read. I've got the first chapter.
So what I will tell you, though, is, you know, I mean, the first book won so many awards. I mean, it was, as you said, it was listed by Book Authority as the number two introvert book ever written. HubSpot was one of the most highly rated sales books ever written. But what's interesting is the reason we wrote it that way is I wanted it to read like a novel. Because let's face it, learning to sell or network is feels confronting for an introvert. Yes. So I wanted it to read like a novel so that they would get the opportunity, everyone reading it would get the opportunity to laugh out loud with the characters in the story and just happen to learn selling or networking throughout the process. And I think that's why it succeeded. But what was interesting is in the first book, now everybody knows my brand too well, but in the first book, we tell all these stories. Everyone's probably wondering, does this guy, like, are these real stories? Because we're so used to fictitious examples. Yes. Well, in the later part of the story, in the later part of the book, Derek Lewis, my ghostwriter, comes out from behind. We use the Wizard of Oz quote, you know, pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. He comes out and tells his own chapter first person. And he actually shares his own story about how the sales system took him from, you know, 27,000 in 2013, 12,000 in October of 2014 when we met, to 120,000 by the end of the year, 300,000 the following year. And I mean, he made 200,000 just in April the following year. Right. So he tells that real story about how he shied away from sales and he didn't realize he was, but he was, and how he succeeded through the sales system. But the thing that's unique is that the reason why that book did so well is because that highlighted that all the stories are real. Every single story, there are 22 stories inside The Introvert's Edge to Networking. Every single person is a real story of real person, and they've all signed releases to be part of the book to allow their stories to help people that are trying to learn how to network and sell. So that's one of the real differentiators, because my whole brand's built on authenticity. And I believe that, I mean, that's why, you know, he said Forbes, you know, he talks about the man that's actually done it.
Yeah.
You know, Neil Patel, I think he's one of the top 10, you know, global influencers in networking. Tom Ziegler, who's Zig Ziglar's son. By the way, Zig Ziglar's in case you're wondering, and so is Tom, so is Neil Patel, but all of them talk about me being the person that has actually done it, and that is the difference. I'm not talking about theory. I'm showing you how to do it, what to
You've
do
done it.
Step by step the process. But not only have I done it for myself, I'm actually sharing stories of people that I have taught to do it and give you the exact strategies taught them, and then showing you how we applied it to their unique situation. So there is no going to work in the real world. It continually works,
and it does
people to obtain rapid growth even in this current COVID environment.
There's a lot seems to be happening under the current COVID situation, and I'm reading about lots of unexplained success, and I'm wondering if that's to do with the fact that we've had to all take a breath and stop hurrying and hustling, and we've had time to reflect. And as we said before the program, I've loved this time. I love being in my little home office and doing everything online and not really having to go anywhere or do anything much. And I find it interesting that you've moved to North Carolina or South Carolina?
North Carolina. Yeah, so we're
North Carolina. And is it a rural space?
So it's interesting. So we are, it's still a primary city, but they call it the triangle because you've got a big city, which is Raleigh. You've got a smaller city, but busy city, which is Durham. And then there's this little town that's about a 30-minute drive from both of them. You know, if you're in Melbourne, it wouldn't be as big as Geelong, but it would be like Geelong as an example. But, you know, it's a little town. It doesn't have a huge population. And my wife and I live in a outer area of that. Like literally where we live, there is like no COVID. Kids are still playing out the front. You know, the situation, I mean, it'd be more like Australia than the US if you like. So, you know, the situation here, you know, it's relatively remote, which we like, but I'm still, you know, I said to my wife, I can live anywhere you want as long as we're within a 45-minute drive from the airport. And without traffic, I am 45 minutes from the airport. So she literally 45 minutes. You know, the thing for us is, you know, the COVID has been, it's been interesting. So I think everybody had a bit of a shell shock about April time. And people were worried that people weren't going to make decisions. And people, like, literally, we would have people on my team and, you know, they'd be talking to people and, you know, they'd be moving forward and they'd be like, oh, actually, with COVID, can I just wait 2 weeks? And then, you know, so everybody went through that weird time. However, there were strategies that we used to get them past that. Most people aren't prepared for that, right? So they don't handle it well. They don't treat it with empathy. They treat it with bully sales tactics. And for me, sales should not be transactional. There should be no bulldogs, you know, no hard closings, none of that. Networking shouldn't be transactional, but it also can't be aimless either. You need a system and a strategy for both. Yes. But the thing is that if you have it and you channel, I mean, introverts are amazing listeners. They have amazing empathy. Channel that into a system. They're unbelievable at both networking, selling, presenting, the works. Great leaders as well. The thing is that we had that little period, but then most of the world went back to normal, except, I mean, a lot of people tell themselves these stories that the world is still tough. And the trouble is stories, I mean, the studies out of, there's studies that show that it short circuits the logical mind and you speak directly to the emotional mind. So you've got to be careful the stories you're telling yourself, because you tell yourself, and because it's not, you're not thinking logically when you tell yourself these reasons for why you can't succeed, this narrative, right? You've got to be careful that you can still believe them even when they're not true. And for a lot of people right now, COVID is, you know, for me, I mean, what was interesting, I mean, of course, my speaking business kind of fell apart like a lot of people's speaking businesses did. I've done a couple of virtual events. I moved a lot to next year. I lost very few events that physically canceled, but the ones that were like, no, you can't cancel, as opposed to what about next year? Or what about a virtual event? Or how can I help you? Empathy and understanding and active listening.
Yes.
They're the ones that lost everything and their reputation and their relationship. So for me, I didn't really notice, but I will tell you that both my revenue and my profit is higher than last year, even in the face of COVID. And that's just because more people are actively searching. And yes, you're right. What's what's happened? My father used to tell me, and this used to happen all the time, but I would come home, you know, young kid running a multi-million dollar business, terrified really still. Didn't know really what I was doing. I'd come home and the world was on fire and I didn't know how to handle this situation. The world was going to end if I didn't figure out a solution. And instead of pushing through, my father would say, what would happen if the worst thing happened? And we'd talk through what that would look like. Oh, it's not that bad. Matter of fact, it might actually be better than if I did push through. Sometimes stopping and reassessing is the most powerful thing you can ever do. And a lot of people in their own businesses, they just get into the hustle and they put these blinders on and they think workload and grit is what's going to get them to success. You know, the smart people realize that this was a great time to learn. And this is actually a really good thing about Australia. Yes. Australia do tend to go back to education when things like this happen. And the Australian government actually does a lot to support that. In America, the smart people go back to education, but there are a lot of people that just get stuck in this spiral and can't see a way out and watch the news way too much.
Listen, before we run out of time, Matthew, I just want to go back to your next book, The Introvert Edge series, and it focuses on networking. Why did you decide with this book to focus on networking from an introvert's perspective?
Well, I think if you were to ask an introvert what are the things they struggle with most or that they're worst at, the first thing that would come to mind is sales. So I went, you know what, I'm gonna jump that beachhead first, because for me, or charge that beachhead, I should say. But if I'm going to charge, if I had written networking first, I don't think I would have written a sales one next, because for two reasons.
Right.
One is that, you know, network is a much bigger topic, right? So it would have opened up to a whole different audience. But secondly, you know, I literally in the book say that introverts outsell extroverts, and I fully expected to get slammed publicly for saying it, except for the fact that everyone didn't slam me. You know, like Jeb Blunt, who's one of the biggest sales trainers in the world now, wrote the foreword for my next book going, I'm an introvert, but Matt was the first one to truly own it, not be terrified to say it out loud.
Yes.
Right? So
yes.
The big thing was it was hugely well reviewed, you know, and it succeeded really well. And I went, well, what is the next most important topic? And the truth is I only write topics that I know really well. Like we don't have kids. Yes. So if I was going to write the introvert's edge to parenting, it wouldn't be incredibly authentic. I wouldn't have many stories to tell. So, you know, about what everybody else was doing wrong in parenting, I'm pretty sure that wouldn't get rave reviews. So for me, I pick topics that I have a lot of experience with.
You know. No,
I moved to the US not knowing a soul. And in the space of 12 months, I was invited to events as one of the most connected people in the city. And I had to create, what was interesting is I didn't like the networking process, the way that I'd researched it.
Yes. You
know, elevator pitches felt contrived. I didn't like that framing. And I wanted to focus on authenticity. Yep. And it was the first time I'd really had to sell myself. Until then, I was selling products and services. So it was very different. Uh-huh. So I actually created my own networking process. So it was the one that I had the most experience to focus on next. It was the one that I felt like was the most relevant. But it is a series, right? So the introvert's edge to networking. But the truth is that, you know, I'm one of the top 50 speakers in the world now, according to a lot of different websites. So there will be a book on that coming. But eventually, I'm opening it up. My plan is to open it up to other authors to give them, you know, topic matter experts that can help introverts. This was never supposed to be. The goal is that I want to see introverts succeed. And at the moment, I'm the one leading the charge with the things that I know about. But as soon as that's...
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, I'm excited to open the doors to other people.
Because there's specific challenges that you have to deal with that only another introvert is going to understand what that's like and the processes that you have to go through to make you get up in front of an audience and speak, get in front of a microphone, put yourself out there. There's a different process for introverts. And it's just been wonderful talking to you and having such a prominent introvert to talk to about the intricacies of being an introvert. So before we run out of time, and we've got 3 minutes left now, I want to know how people can connect. Let's tell the audience how they can connect with you, where they can get the book, and those things that will make a difference in their life.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for asking. So firstly, I put a ton of free content out online. I mean, I learned on YouTube, so I do my very, very best to return the favor. So you can go to YouTube. You can find a ton of free content on helping you succeed as an introvert. You can check out the Introvert's Edge podcast, which has a ton of amazing introverts that you wouldn't expect to be introverted, sharing their amazing stories. Connect with me on LinkedIn, Facebook. I share a ton of content there as well. Also, you know, MatthewPollard.com is my website, but you're welcome to go to theintrovertsedge.com. My publisher hates me when I say this, but you don't need to buy my first book on selling. You know, the first chapter literally breaks down selling for an introvert and outlines the first 7 steps. So one of the things I tell people all the time is if you do nothing more than grab that 7-step outline, look at what you currently say and fit it into that, you realize that you say a bunch of things out of order and you say a bunch of things that don't fit. Stop saying that to customers. Then fill in the gaps, which will be around questioning and storytelling, and you'll double your sales in 60 days just with that. Then I would recommend you can also go to MatthewPollard.com/growth, and there you'll be able to download a template to create your own unified message and discover your niche of willing to buy clients. And then thirdly, I mean, my new book, The Introvert's Edge to Networking, you know, that comes out in January, but it is available for pre-sale now. If you pick up a copy, you know, feel free to reach out to me on LinkedIn, send me a receipt. I hope you don't mind me volunteering you, Tony, but forward them to Tony and she'll forward them to me. And I'll make sure that you send through your email address and a photo of the receipt, and we'll make sure you get access to all the pre-bonuses. And, you know, if you look at the bonuses in the back of the first book, we put a ton of bonuses out to help. And the other thing will be we're going to be putting together a launch team as well to launch this book, to get it out to as many people as possible. So if you are interested in that, if you want to be a supporter of the cause, you know, there'll be a form that we'll publicly share on social media, and we'll be trying to get as many people to share the word of the book as we possibly can.
Matthew, do you still work one-on-one with clients to help them get those rapid results?
Yeah, I do. So I do work with a small group, and it really is. I only work with about three or four
Yes.
clients a month. Now, I
Yeah.
only work with people on really short-term engagements, but what I notice is
Yep.
once the strategy's done, once they're starting to implement it, they're already getting that momentum. They don't need someone
Yes.
of my caliber anymore, right? So they really
Yeah,
just
yeah.
need to hold their hand, and a lot of people don't even need that. They're kind of self-motivated now
Yeah.
they've got that strategy. So once they're getting
Yeah.
results, that's the end of the engagement. So I do work with, three to four clients a month. I do work with people on a short-term basis, but my online academy, my Rapid Growth
Yes.
Academy, so many people go through that,
Yes.
and they get the
Yeah.
same results. So a lot of people, they feel like they need to work with me one-on-one. The truth is that they probably
Yeah,
don't.
yeah.
The online academy
Don't.
still
Yeah.
has me
Does
there
lots.
helping them. There's a lot of support there. But yeah, I
Yeah.
definitely do. And you'll get the opportunity that if you do find your way into my world, right? If you want to say, no, I really want to work with Matt, you'll be able to find a way to
You'll
reach
get.
out. We can get on a phone and have a
Yeah,
chat
yeah.
about it. That
Yeah.
said, there are so many things you can do yourself. There's so much free content out there.
Absolutely.
Remember, I learned to sell watching YouTube videos. So there are
Yeah.
so many things
Google
you can
things.
do. Absolutely. So, if I can help you cut the learning curve because you want to move further faster, if you've got a really cool
Yes.
story, I mean, of course I write books. So, I look for great stories of cool businesses or the people. I love bringing people back from the brink because they make for great stories to share later. And then so many people say, you
Yes.
can't share my story. And then after they're now multi-million dollar businesses, they're like, you can share my story. I'm good with that.
Yeah,
So
yeah.
the
Yeah,
goal
yeah.
for me is just to help as many people as possible. And I like working with great people. So if you're, an abundant thinker that really feels like they've got something
Reach out to
to help
Matthew.
people with, feel free, reach out.
Matthew, we are completely out of time. It has been an absolute privilege, and I'm so grateful that you agreed to come on my show today. Reach out people to Matthew Pollard, especially if you're an introvert, because that's what got me in. Matthew, thank you for your time today. Very much appreciated. This is Tony Lontis on Radio Tony Everyday Business, and that, my friends, is your lot for today. Thank you so much, Matthew. We'll see you all next week. Bye for now. Thank you for watching and listening to Tony TV. For more inspirational stories, join us next week. Bye for now.